Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavas. Thanks for joining us for episode 37. And tomorrow, mate, it's all over, Red Rover. Term two, done and dusted.
It's always a massive relief for teachers, isn't it? Because term two is the big one.
It is the big one. We got reports for us. We got student led conferences. I've had that the last couple of nights, the Monday and the Tuesday night, and late finishes for me. 8 o'clock Monday, 6 o'clock Tuesday. That's a big week.
Well, you've done well to show up for the final podcast of the term, Adam.
I have. I brought a pillow with me just in case halfway through I needed a bit of a kip, but that's the way it goes.
Well, as always, it's the in our final episode of the term, we'll probably have a slightly extended episode, and we've got lots of interesting topics to go with. And as always, we've got a special guest, Adam, but I know there was one or two things you wanted to mention beforehand.
Oh, just briefly, I know that being a Geelong man yourself, the old D's, mate, got up on Sunday. I was a very, very happy man. I think, actually, funny stat, when I started teaching in 07, since that time, Melbourne has not beaten Geelong once in all that time. And being a teacher in Geelong, there's a lot of kids who barrack for Geelong. And, you know, I always wear my Melbourne gear and they're on my sleeve and that sort of stuff. And they are happy to get into me. So it's the first time in my teaching career that Melbourne's actually beaten Geelong.
Well, you've been a long-suffering member, Adam. And it was a great win for the Demons. For those people outside of Victoria and the country, I would say the Melbourne Demons beat my side, the Geelong Cats, in Aussie Rules football. So, you know, good luck to them and good luck to you, Adam.
Yeah, we're on the way up. So any listeners out there that haven't signed up as a Melbourne member, 1-800-DEMONS, and you can get on board. No, I'm only kidding, But we do have an extended episode today, and we do have a very special guest, Rick.
Well, we're very lucky, Adam. We had Nigel Holloway last term, who we went to university with. And luckily, today we've got another friend of ours who we went to university with, who's a teacher. And we'd like to welcome our first female guest to Two Regular Teachers, Cara Johnson. Hi, Cara.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here, especially as the first female guest.
Yeah, we didn't know how to handle it, having a female guest. It's kind of like I don't know, you know, how to say things and that sort of stuff when you're bloke and blokey and that sort of stuff. So I'm a bit nervous, Rick, to be honest.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because the Two Regular Teachers podcast is kind of like the opposite of what primary school personnel is like. You know, we aren't lacking males. We haven't been lacking males. We've probably been lacking females. So it's great to have Cara on. So we did go to university together, and Cara and I worked at the same school for a time. But now Cara is in a specialist role as a teacher out at Deakin University.
So I've started a new position this year at the university, and excited to talk about it tonight with the topics that we've got involved.
Yeah, we've got lots to get through. So let's get into it, Adam. Well, Adam, the first topic we want to talk about tonight really ties in with Cara's role out at Deakin Uni. And our listeners might remember we had Nigel Holloway on at the end of Term 1. And Nigel mentioned in one of our topics, we were talking about graduate teachers and student teachers. And Nigel mentioned a program that Deakin Uni had started that formed a relationship between the uni, student teachers and schools. And Cara, thankfully for us, is actually in that team working at Deakin University. Is that right?
I am, yeah. It's exciting. It's, I guess you guys were talking about, you know, the gap in pre-service teachers and the link between the schools. And the role that I've started is, I guess, bridging that gap. It's starting to bridge that gap and form a new model of pre-service teaching for pre-service teachers.
Because, let's be honest, it's... The gap's been there for a little while, hasn't it, Cara?
It's been there a long time.
You talk to student teachers and you bring certain things up with them and they kind of go, oh, I don't really know about that, or oh, we weren't taught about that. And we can even think back to when we were there. You know, you think back and go, geez, I wish we'd been taught this, or we wish we'd been taught that. And I suppose, I guess your role is to really try and bridge that gap so the student teachers are going to, you know, apply for jobs and go into schools with them as much knowledge as possible.
Definitely. And the school, I guess, works in one system and the university works in a different system, and it's linking those two together. So my role is called a site director. So we've been employed by Deakin, but it's an initiative with the Department of Education as well. I've put in $1.6 million for the for this project, and I guess the big thing is just about improving teacher quality. So the aim of the project for the next 2 years is to improve teacher quality by linking those university and school sectors together.
Who do you think the crucial player is in that whole relationship now that you've started the job? Like, who's standing? I mean, it's probably, I mean, you'd like to think that everyone has a part to play, but now that it's happening, what's the most crucial element, I guess, and who's got the crucial role, do you think?
Wow, well, at the moment, us probably I think we've got a key component into bringing it together because we've got the opportunity to work with the pre-service teachers, to work with mentor teachers, to work with school leadership team, and to work with the academics. So what we do will change the course, hopefully, in a lot of ways. It'll change what pre-service teachers do in schools. It's like a residency-based model that we're trying to achieve. Yeah. So at the moment, I'd like to say us, but yeah, I think everyone has a key area to play. Yeah.
When you're trying to bridge that gap, so say like we're teachers right now, what's the sort of feedback that you're looking for from a school or from a mentor teacher? What's sort of the early things that you might be looking to start to develop and talk to schools about in terms of the student teachers?
Look, the big thing for us that we're trying to do and work with schools to do is to bring theory and practice together. So the theory was happening at the university, the practice would happen at the school. So we're drawing those together. We're running like what's called assessment circles that draw those together. So it allows pre-service teachers to work with mentor teachers around the Australian professional standards at the graduate level. So pre-service teachers, I guess, are working with mentor teachers on the theory and practice.
That can only be good for student teachers. What's the student teachers you've worked with, what's their reaction been to having you and your colleagues in? Like, how are they reacting to the program?
A little bit nervous, because I guess there's our role to... How it works is there's five teaching academies from Warrnambool to Melbourne. So there's five teaching academies in Geelong. So with my... I've got what's called an alliance of... seven schools in the Geelong area. So we the Alliance schools only make up about 20% of the students going through Deakin. So there's 80% that won't be going through Alliance schools. Okay. So for the ones that are going through the Alliance schools, it's been a mix. There's been some are really excited at the opportunity, but I think it's an understanding of they're not sure of what it involves at the moment. And as time has gone on, the ones that were a little bit reserved or a little bit nervous can see what the benefits will be in terms of, you know, looking for jobs and things afterwards. They're going to gain a lot more knowledge.
I was going to say that, like, even before they get into the school system, they're getting some of that knowledge, like you said, matching things to the standards.
Well, before you go on there, Rick, how often, and Cara, you know, having been a teacher and having student teachers, how often do you get that fourth year teacher where you bring certain aspects of the teaching profession up and they almost give you the blank face, or I haven't done anything, I don't know what that is, and you kind of go, oh geez, that's something, you know, you would have hoped you would know by then. So to hear that you're trying to bring all that together and merge it and do those things, I think, like you said, some are a little bit nervous, some I think once they realize the benefits and that filters back through the student teachers coming through and they pass all that knowledge on, I think it can only be a positive thing.
And it's a big thing. I guess the teaching is about professional learning, and you don't really realise that, I don't think, as a pre-service teacher till you get into the profession. Mm. So they're getting that insight of professional learning before they get into the profession.
That can only be a good thing, I think. Now, this reminds me of having Cara on that. It reminds me of an article that I saved months ago for the podcast, and it was in The Age, and the title was A Day in the Life of a First Year Primary Teacher. And newspapers have these sort of articles when school year kicks off to paint a picture. And it was about a girl, primary school teacher, Caitlin Schulman, who's from Hampton Primary School, has a class of year one students, 21 year one students. So she's working at a perfect class size.
I'll give you anything for that. I've got 24, so, you know, good on you, Carly.
27 for me.
Yeah, 27, you go.
But look, I'm certainly not here to diss Caitlin, but a lot of the quotes in it from her, it's very idyllic. And good luck to her. She's working at a great school, clearly. Mm. She has a team around her. She's team planning. She mentions lots of things, and I kind of think that the subject of the paper's chosen, it's idyllic. Now, lots of her insights about her job are fair and genuine, and we'll put the article on the blog. But I thought to myself with Cara's role, what if grads don't have the support that Caitlin alludes to in her article? So if they get into a school that doesn't have supportive colleagues, doesn't have a full team around them, like a small school, maybe has, you know, the odd person who's not a great people person, what happens to that graduate who's left, you know, kind of left on their own a little bit? Mm. Maybe this is where Cara's role and Deakin's, this whole program can help, perhaps, do you think?
Definitely, because it builds networks that maybe if you don't have networks within the school, potentially if you go into a school that hasn't got good networks, that you've still got networks that you've made outside the school that you can draw upon as well. But the article made me think a little bit about us as teachers and how we've survived or how we've thrived, what are the things that have worked for us?
I think the biggest thing, I think what you touched on, Cara, about networks is really, really important, because if you don't have that support, and I know teachers, and I know known times where they've gone into a school and they've basically been told, you're in this area and you're in that area by yourself, you've got to teach it by yourself. I mean, to any person in any job, that's a big deal. So to put someone in front of 24 kids and you've got to do it yourself, you don't really have that support, is tough. So that networking where maybe those teachers can get back to you and go, Cara, look, this is the situation I've been put in. Can I have some support? Can you give me some feedback in that? And you've got that experience, yeah. And they've built that network. And you can even go, yeah, well, I've actually had, Brad's actually rang me up the previous day. He's in the same situation. Why don't you guys catch up for a coffee? Why don't you guys sit down and give each other that support across, you know, across schools? That's I think, what could be real positive out of it.
Yeah.
Do you think, I know the program is focusing on helping, make that connection, as you said, between theory and practice, but I wonder whether the program can also help alleviate poor student teachers being in there and also maybe filtering out those, you know, current staff members who take student teachers who maybe aren't taking them for the right reasons. Do you think it would do that at all?
Yeah, a big part of our job and what we're developing, I talked about a model of what we're building, and what we're doing this year is beginning to work out what that model will look like, so next year it will come into play. But part of it will be to pair pre-service teachers specifically with mentor teachers to get the best out of both, which includes mentoring mentor teachers as well, and providing professional development for them too. But one of the great opportunities that we have is to talk, with mentor teachers about what pre-service teachers are missing, and with school leadership teams as well. And I actually had an interesting conversation with a principal recently that was talking. We had a pre-service teacher that wasn't particularly suited, maybe to the profession. And, you know, like you said, there's opportunities for us to see that and factor those, you know, what we do in those situations, where other schools don't have opportunities, I guess, to do that, or non-alliance schools. But he said one of the things that he's noticed is it's not necessarily the high academic achieving pre-service teachers, but teachers need a specific aptitude to be a teacher. And so do we aptitude test pre-service teachers, or this was his idea, to get the right teachers or the best teachers, which is an interesting concept.
That's absolutely fantastic, because how many times have we had a discussion about, you know, that student who can get HDs, high distinctions and distinctions, but can stand up in front of the classroom and don't know what to do in front of kids and don't know how to handle them and how to control them and how to really teach them. But they can go away and do, you know, do something on maths and do it very well on a high distinction, but can't actually teach kids. It's so different to being able to sit in a lecture theatre.
It's great that these conversations, that you just touched on are happening. And it's nice to hear, obviously, on the team you're working with, there's experienced teachers like you, but there's principals as well, or ex-principals.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great, isn't it? Yeah, it's drawing in, I guess, lots of different, professionals into it to get the best out of it, because, you know, there's high pressure, I guess, to be teachers, but we need good quality teachers coming through, the best teachers coming through. So hopefully this will help with that.
Yeah, bridge that gap, yeah. I suppose, yeah.
Absolutely. So hopefully other unis around the state take on, if they haven't already, take on this kind of program. And, well, as I said, we've put the article on the blog. It's just it's a nice little insight into what a first-year grad experiences. We kind of hope to have a first-year grad on the show one day, don't we?
Yes, yeah, we do, because I think we forget we've been in the job for a long time now. I mean, 10 years is a long time, and we forget what it's like to go way back and have that first year and almost being thrown in the deep end. And I think it's gotten harder. It's gotten harder as the years have gone on for first-year teachers. There's more assessment. There's more planning. There's so much more to do that a first-year grad can almost not understand what's involved and be absolutely smashed with it, and it runs them into the ground. So, yeah, we'd like to have that on too, to sort of see how it's all going as well.
It's a different generation too, I think, of graduate teachers coming. Like, they're a different generation that aren't necessarily staying in the job for as long, as well.
So. And what we do is we want to keep them in, don't we, Curry? We want to keep these people in there. We don't want them to be scared off and say, this is too hard for not enough money. I'm going to go and do something else, because, we want them in the jobs.
So if you're in another state and you know of a university that's doing anything like this, please share it and leave a comment on the blog. Well, Adam, for our second topic tonight with Cara, we've talked about parents a lot. It's a they play a big part in this job, don't they? And Cara, I think you became a parent for the first time in 2009.
2009,
yes. Yeah, that's right. So
well remembered, mate.
That was good. Well, it was an important time. And but Cara's got two daughters now, and I guess with you being a teacher as long as we have, I think it'd be interesting to get your insights into. I was going to call it a transition, like the transition between teaching and then becoming a parent, but it's not really because you're still a teacher and you're still a parent. But I guess has there been any crossover in, like, what's it been like moving from being a teacher and thinking about kids to thinking about kids when they're your own?
Yeah, definitely. Look, it's huge. Probably this year, our eldest daughter started school. So that's probably the biggest thing, I guess, of thinking of being parent and teacher. Choosing a school, tough decision as a parent, because you really want to be a parent and not a teacher. So I tried really hard in choosing a school to be a parent, but the teacher just comes in a little bit on that as well. And your decision making, I guess, is that. That's probably the biggest thing. But look, it's a big thing when your kids start school. So
do you get a bit nervous? Like, I'm already thinking, even 5 years ahead when my daughter goes, do you kind of not want the teacher to know you're a teacher? Do you kind of want to just be a parent? Because I find that if I do a student-led conference with a family that I know that person's a teacher, you almost get a little bit more nervous. Like, are they going to try and really, you know, dissect your curriculum and do this, which never happens really.
Yes.
But do you get a little bit? Would you rather just be seen purely as a parent, or does the prep teacher know that you're a teacher?
Look, the prep teacher knows I'm a teacher.
Yep.
I parent help in the class.
Okay. Yep.
Do a little bit of guided reading in the class each week.
So you've been given a...
I've got a teacher role in my parent capacity.
Yeah, she picked up straight away. Yeah. She's a teacher. Well, come on in, do some guided reading for me.
Yeah, you always want, as a teacher, you always want parent teachers coming in to help in your class. It's great.
She hasn't given you any correction to take home, has
no,
she?
No, no correction. Not at this stage.
That's second semester, that is.
Yeah, yeah, but it's. I think you get treated probably differently as a parent being a teacher. Teachers probably feel the need to give you more in-depth information, probably curriculum related, I guess.
I think I would. I think that's what I would fall into if I was a parent. I think I'd be concerned. I think I'd feel more comfortable to give, like, the jargon, knowing that they understand the jargon.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was going to jump in and say that to other parents listening. It's not because we don't think you deserve more information. It's just that some of that information can be really wordy, where you may actually go, I actually don't know what he's talking about. So it is. You want to kind of give them the jargon and give them more of that feedback.
Definitely. Look, in choosing a school, I didn't. Mm. I made it really clear that I wasn't a teacher. Well, I didn't refer to it at all, because you definitely get treated differently in that situation. So I went through purely as a parent. But I guess the biggest thing is being a parent and a teacher is probably the reflection of what I used to be like prior to children as a teacher.
Yep.
Because I think I'm a different teacher now that I am a parent. I think I understand kids a little bit differently, or their development.
Yep.
That's
right. Well, that was going to be my question. I was going to say, as a teacher, because I kind of feel like when the day comes, if I'm lucky enough to have kids, that I've kind of got a head start on how to manage them. I know there's lots of things that don't come into play as a teacher working with kids, but I wonder whether once you became a parent, once the kids got a little bit older, whether the management and the relationship, whether there was any skills from your teaching background that you used at all.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you do. And just naturally, probably. And it's probably non-teachers that see it, they often say, I would never think to do that, where it comes naturally probably to a teacher to do something like that. But there's pressure, I guess, for a teacher as well, though. I remember in my first year, I had a student, and her father was a principal. So I felt heaps of pressure, you know, as a teacher. Yeah. So I think if you're on the flip side, if you're a teacher, there's a bit of pressure on that side as well.
Yeah, I think there is. I think any time I've had even just a teacher come into, your three-way conferences, you're on your toes a bit more.
Yeah, you are. And I always thought that I want them to treat me with respect, because when I eventually go in, I purely want to go in as a parent. A student-led conference, for example, I know I keep bringing that up, but I just want to sit there and look at my daughter's work and talk to her about it and celebrate and go, wow, that's great. I'm not going to sit there and go, so can you actually go and get your curriculum book there? I just want to have a look at what you did in week 5. That's not what it's going to be about. I just want to sit. I don't want to even look at me as a teacher. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here for my daughter. You know, that's what it is. But you still feel the pressure is like, I want them to come in and treat me that way, because that's how I would want to treat the other teachers that I'm going to interact with, when my daughter goes to school.
Yeah, and that's probably the sign of a good parent, though, as well, to be that. Because I think there's probably parent teachers out there that maybe are not so...
a bit more judgmental.
Parent-oriented, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. an article that we've put on the blog that kind of links into the topic of you know, being a parent and being a teacher is one that I saw through the Splash ABC website, Adam. Yeah. And also, I just liked their Facebook page the other day. They've got some great stuff on it.
Been busy, mate.
I have been busy. Yeah. Even in the last week of term.
You have.
The headline is, "Are you compromising your children's privacy online?" So with Cara in today, and with, I guess, with you, Adam, being a new parent, we know that we've talked about social media before, and people putting up all sorts of information and terms. We've talked about privacy settings, and we've talked about kids using social media, haven't we? But this article talks about how much is too much about of parents putting up information and photos of their children. And they've coined a phrase, it's called sharenting, like the pros and cons of sharenting. Yep. And it brings up some interesting things. One of them that stood out to me is, I guess, when the day comes that a child becomes a teenager, are they going to be embarrassed with what's already on a social network that's been put up by their parents? Because let's be honest, if a parent is, this is in my opinion, if a parent is putting loads of photos and loads of information about their child and, you know, letters to them or whatever on social media, that child's digital footprint has begun before they've even logged on themselves.
Yeah, before they even know what a digital footprint is, before they're even making footprints of their own, mate.
That's, what do you think of that, Cara? I mean, I know you've put some information on social media, like all parents, all normal stuff. What are your thoughts on the article?
Well, I think one of the biggest things with the article is that our children are going to know a lot more about us and about themselves than, you know, us or previous generations. We've got to find out that information by sitting down with our parents, but our kids are going to be able to find things out from their digital footprint, really. And it is, you're almost creating, you know, their digital footprint when they're young, potentially, without any input from them at all, which could be quite dangerous.
That's right. And look, from my perspective too, we, you know, when we had Sienna, we made a pretty conscious decision to not do too much. Like, we didn't want to be, you know, parents who every day there was a photo every day. We kind of put one up every now and again, you know, something like that. But I don't want my daughter all over it. Now, that's our personal decision. Yep. Other people obviously have different thoughts and different, you know, you see those who put it up every day, they're doing this, they're doing that and things. And that's their decision. I'm certainly not judgmental on that, but we made a conscious decision that we didn't want to put too much out there, because it's just not, if you want to know our daughter and you want to come and see pictures, pop over, we've got a little album, we'll show you through the album, you know, we've got it ready to go. So.
Well, look, privacy is a big thing. And parents who are on Facebook, for example, who have got a hold of their privacy settings, and it's okay, because then they can form their own private little network with other parents and share things. And I think, look, this issue, it's easy for a non-parent to diss it, I think, but and I think it's okay to share moments, but is there a line? And what is the line? Or is the line too blurry about where there's too much in terms of sharing? I don't know. What do you think?
There's definitely a line, and it's crossed, I think. Like, if you went on a parenting forum or, you know, something like that, the information that's shared, a lot of those things are well beyond what they should be. Mm-hmm. So,
I think it's tough. I know that there's been things in the press about fathers just out with their kids and they're running around, you know, with no clothes on. You know, they're only 2 years old and they're playing in the sprinkler or whatever, and there's a bit of furor about that. You shouldn't be posting that stuff, and, you know, it can get quite vile, some of the things that people say to these fathers as the fathers of the kids running around. But you put yourself in that position by putting something like that out there. Do you really need to put a picture of your two-year-old child who doesn't have a say without any clothes on? Does that need to, is that the line? Is that a line there where, you know, we shouldn't be doing that sort of stuff? They should be in situations that aren't embarrassing. That if you would think, you know, 13 years down the line, is this picture going to embarrass them? Is this picture going to be a problem for them down the line? That's the question I think they need to be asking.
Yeah, common. I think that's the key. Mm. Yeah.
Common sense. You would hope common sense.
Yeah, sure. And now for topic 3, Adam, you wanted to talk about those annoying things that we do. Pen clicking, shuffling feet, fidgeting. Now, you found an article during the week. And
what it brought up for me, guys, is that there was an article on Mindshift, and we'll have that article on the blog about let kids fidget in class, why it can be good for those to ADHD. And it really got me thinking about, Cara, I'll throw it over to you. Do we get stuck into the kids too much about fidgeting, and should we allow them to have that option?
Yeah, this is a big topic because I think there'll be lots of divided opinions maybe on this. Look, I think we all have habits that we, you know, even as adults, where, like you mentioned, we all have different habits and kids are the same. Some, you know, it's a learnt, to sit still is a learnt habit. You have to teach them. But some kids just have a lot more difficulty in doing that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Some kids, and it doesn't mention this, I mean, it talks a lot about kids with ADHD in the article, but I just want to touch on kids that don't have any of these kind of disabilities. And because sometimes kids are listening intently, but they're moving around, and sometimes we get pulled up, don't we? If we pull them up, they still might have taken in everything that we're saying.
Yeah.
We all do, as you said, we all fidget in some way.
And I like, in the article, it talked about the research behind it. So they did the study on two different, you know, the students with ADHD and those without, and tested and trialled, and the different results from that, rather than someone's opinion. Like, there were some findings from that. But, you know, some kids listen to music and they can work at the same time, where, I mean, I couldn't do that. I couldn't concentrate.
Exactly. And why I wanted to bring up the meeting situation where we're adults is, how often do we sit and listen at a staff meeting? We are listening because it's always important stuff. But we're fidgeting. We've got something. Like, I do it all the time. If I've got a pen, I'm playing with it. I'm sucking on the end of the pen. I'm doing something, but I'm fidgeting. But then we get into the classroom and the kids do the same thing and we tell them off. So are we actually missing the boat a little bit there? Should we actually be just going about it and not encouraging them to do it, but allowing them to have that outlet?
Well, the article mentions about some of the things that can be done for kids with ADHD, and this has been known for years, hasn't it? And which ties in with what you're saying, like giving the kids something to squeeze, like a squeezy toy, or something that they can kind of take their mind off that fidgeting. But I kind of think that maybe we need to balance out, you know, how we, like, if I don't think, because none of us, like you said, none of us sit still for a long period of time. So maybe when it, like, I've started doing it a bit this year. I've got a couple of students that do move a little bit, particularly if we're doing a serial novel. But if it's not really distracting the entire class, I kind of just let them move and just wait. And then if it gets too much, maybe you'll remind them. But I think there has to be some leeway.
Yeah, it's the dynamics, I guess, if your class, you know, it depends how many students you've got doing different things as well, because some can be, it could be more distracting to the rest of the class. So you've got the rest of the class off task with two on.
And that's a great point, Karen. Something when I read something like this always comes up for me is, how far is too far? Now, where it says let kids fidget in class, you are always going to have a couple of kids who go, you beauty, how far can I take this fidgeting? Oh, I've got to go and jump on the trampoline again. They're out there five times a lesson jumping on the trampoline. Oh, no, I need to go for another run, because they're not enjoying the lesson or they're not understanding it. So off they go for a run because it gets them out of the classroom. Is there a certain line? Again, we were talking about line sign, but, you know, we're going to have those kids who go, who want to fidget and have this ball and have this, and they actually aren't listening because they're going, well, I'm allowed to fidget, so I'm going to see how far I can take it.
Well, society, you know, has showed that we sit still and we listen to people, doesn't it? Like, it's respect. And we teach kids active listening skills with their body language from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I remember a mentor teacher drilling it into me that if you ask for pens to be down and there's still one that hasn't been put down, you wait and you tell them. And it's hard. But I think that's a really tricky one. With kids with ADHD, I think you've got to just know them really well, don't you? So yeah. I did have a student who used to run around the oval. It was suggested to me when they came into the class that they should. I never thought that student was trying to break the system, so to speak, or take advantage. But there's so many interesting things that they can do to help them, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're spot on with knowing the students, because you have to still teach that respect of listening, and, you know, they need to learn how to listen, but knowing them and making sure that it doesn't go too far.
Yeah, and it's a reflex too. I mean, we could all admit here and say, when I'm trying, you're trying to teach and you turn around and there's a kid with a pen in their hand and you've told them not to, your instant reflex is to tell them to put that pencil down, even if they're looking at you and they've got it there or something like that. I mean, you can tell when they've got their head down and they're doing something there. Well, clearly they're probably not going to be listening. Nine times out of ten, they're not listening. So do we need to learn as teachers not to be so, you know, the reflex action, we've got to stop a little bit and actually assess quickly. No, they're still listening. They're all right. I'll just let them go because they're listening, rather than stop the lesson to tell them off and, you know, almost put them off the lesson.
Well, here's an interesting one. This is one that when I was reading this article during the week, this popped up. One of the first major conferences I went to that was focused on ICT was, and I took my device along, but I was blown away at the first keynote speaker, that the entire audience was sitting there with their iPad, their laptop, or their smartphone in front of them. Everyone was focused on their screen, you know, either participating in the back channel on Twitter or reading articles that were being brought up by the keynote speaker. I reckon less than a quarter of the audience are actually sitting there watching them. Now, that's a whole new ball game, isn't it?
Totally.
That's fidgeting. That's almost mental fidgeting, isn't it?
It is.
People are focused on what's going on, but it's different. Like, people are having other conversations about the topic. Mm. It's a whole new ball game. And I've been to other conferences where people still look at you if you get your device out as if you're being rude. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
And it's hard to know, I guess, how do you analyse the listening of that? So they might be tuning in and out and getting the idea of it, but are they really listening? The article made me think a little bit about habits for listening and then habits for thinking, because I think you can have habits for thinking. You know, the pen clicking might help get your thoughts into gear of what you're thinking about, but the listening is more of, you know, maybe the quiet time.
That's right. Look, we would have done it at uni too, guys, wouldn't we? Sitting there doing a bit of a doodle and stuff. You're kind of listening and getting it all, and we've all sort of done it. But look, if you have fidgeters in your class or you're a fidgeter yourself, we'll love to hear about it, because there's all sorts of different ones and the way that you actually deal with it. So if you've got anything like that, leave a comment or hit us up on Twitter. So finally brings us now to the final anecdote of term two. And as always, we've got Cara in today as well, that the anecdotes are unseen topics that we want to discuss. So if it's my turn with an anecdote, Rick doesn't know what it's about and vice versa. So tonight, Cara and I are coming in fresh. We don't know what it is. Rick, so it's over to you, big fella.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought we'd take the opportunity, Adam, we've mentioned our uni days to you know, reminisce. And we won't indulge too much because for our listeners, but we will just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
So the three of us went to university together. I mean, we remember 4 years together at Deakin Uni. And Cara and I actually had met just prior to uni, didn't we? And
we
kind of struck up a friendship. And I remember we shared lifts out to O Week, didn't we?
Yeah, early days, yes.
What did we do in O Week? We just went to one information session, that was it. We didn't
party
at all.
Tried to work out where the buildings were.
Wasn't that where with the O Week we were in the same group and you had to come up with like a word for yourself?
That's right, you had to come up with...
And what were you? I was interesting, Adam, or something. You had to come up like with a thumbs up or something. You remember doing that? We had to sit in a circle and then you had to come up like with one word to describe yourself.
Can I just get you on that, Adam? Because yes, you had to come up with a word that had the same first letter as your name. It did. So interesting, Adam.
No, that's wrong. You have to come up with a word to describe yourself. How can you remember that? That's like 14 years ago. You know. Anyway. That's so sorry, true. That was over here. But that's where Rick and I first met, and we looked at each other across the room, and our eyes met. No.
Well, rubbish. There are lots of memories like that, and we had some great times. Yeah, some busy times at uni as well. Cara and I, as I said, we struck up a friendship early, and we did a couple of oral presentations together. I remember, but there's one day I want to see if you can cast your mind back.
Okay.
We'd had a class. If my mind serves me correctly, we had a class or a lecture in the morning. And then we had another lecture in the afternoon. Now, as was our wont at university, you had to fill in a couple of hours. It wasn't worth going home.
I could see exactly where this story is leading.
Most of the time, sometimes we'd go late morning, you'd go over to the bar. It was called the B Bar. And at that stage of the morning, you'd probably have like a nice savoury muffin, and some people have a cup of coffee, get the paper. And then if you sort of went through the transition phase into the afternoon before your next class, someone might just say, "Shall we have a beer?"
Yeah.
And then I only took one person to go, yeah.
There's always Tony Foster that did that too.
There's another guest we should get on. So I remember this one particular day that kind of transition happened, and I think it was this day it was Cara who said, "Yes, let's have a beer." Now, we had a science lecture, I think, due at about 3 o'clock, and this was one of those science subjects that wasn't quite so much tied to the education faculty. At one, maybe people didn't respect it as much, and anyway, one beer probably turned into how many?
A few. This may be ruining my new job at Deakin. And for pre-service teachers listening, please ignore the C stories.
Story.
Well, I think, you know, and now and then on Two Regular Teachers, we need to make ourselves sound like real people, and we are.
Yeah,
you know.
True.
But we did maybe get a bit sort of jolly. And there
we
was,
did.
There
it was a warm afternoon, sitting out on the balcony, having a few, a few drinks.
A few beverages.
Yeah. Now, I remember a very serious conversation just before it was time for the lecture, saying we shouldn't go.
Yes.
Let's not go. And then somewhere in that serious conversation, just before the lecture started, one of us said, "No, let's go."
We can't miss it. We couldn't miss it.
Yeah.
And I remember we sat It was a packed lecture, from what I recall.
It was very busy.
And this, we're not embellishing this at all. And we sat at, I reckon, probably four rows from the front.
Oh, no.
Bad choice.
Yeah, bad choice.
And I won't name the... I mean, you remember the staff from the science faculty. But
I certainly
obviously
do.
We're not here to name them. But, no. I mean, to this day, I feel sorry for the lecturer. We sat there and probably realised that we'd had one too many sips, I think. As soon
10
as
minutes, probably 10 minutes of trying to listen in. Bad choice. We should have gone.
And speaking of fidgeting, there was doodling on, you know, lots of drawings. I think strange drawings of fish, because they were talking about marine life, I think I remember, you know, all sorts of things. Now, Adam, we've heard some great stuff from Cara in this podcast tonight about some of the fantastic stuff she's doing in education. Mm. We'd like to think that we're professional, experienced teachers.
We are.
I have to say, though, and this is the first time I've admitted this in public, Cara and I got asked to leave the lecture.
Oh, no. You actually got asked to leave the lecture.
I think the words were, if you don't want to be here, there's the door.
Really?
And you know what?
You were causing that much of a disturbance. That
tail
you
between the legs.
So was this first year? Is it your first year?
Was it fin between the legs? No,
was this first year you were there, or second
no,
year?
No, it was probably second or third year, I think.
Yeah. Which makes it all the more disappointing.
The only time,
really,
mind you. This was the only time that occurred.
You can understand if it was first year. This is second or third year where you've got a bit of experience. You should have known better. I was never doing that. I was always... Never there, but I was down the front. You know, that's a no. Yeah.
You know what we did, though, and you can qualify this, car. When she said, there's the door, we stayed.
You actually stayed.
I didn't remember leaving. Yeah, I thought.
I think we stayed.
Yeah, we did. There were lots of, giggling and things like that, but we did.
So
we
did
pushed
you, did you
through.
Did you leave again?
I think we
that?
May have
did
turned
you?
Around like they did were... You? Talking to people behind
us. Because I distinctly remember, if this is the way we're going down, that the Ricks had a rocky relationship with that science one, because I still remember one year where things got a little bit out of hand, and Rick was up the back and he almost stood up, because everyone kind of got really chatty. The lecturer went on off and on about something, and everyone got really chatty, and Rick actually, I won't use the phrase that he, like the words he actually used, but said, You're up the creek, mate. You're up the creek without a paddle. He might have used another word there. And Rick, he got the point going on and sat down and was very happy with himself and let him know that. Do you remember that?
I do. Clearly. It was that dirty old creek.
It was a dirty old creek, that one.
Thanks for bringing that up, Adam. But just to finish off, we did stay. And we aren't saying that you should pop into the bar before you head to a lecture, but it was one of the most enjoyable science lectures I'd ever been to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'd like Cara to go home and look through her old exercise books, if she's got them, and try and find some of the doodlings that she did, because I think that's what set me off.
Yeah. And before we finish the anecdote, I'd like to say that I am of a higher moral fibre, and that wouldn't happen to me. So one person on this podcast this evening has some form of maturity.
Well, you know what? They tasted good, though, didn't they?
They did.
I'm sure they did.
Great memories.
So, mate, that brings to a close final episode for Term 2. And Cara, I just want to say thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. So, enjoy your holidays.
Yeah, and you too. Would you come on again?
Unfortunately, Deakin University staff don't get school holidays anymore. So, school holidays for me.
So,
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
That will be feeling quite different for you, won't it?
Yeah, it will, actually. Yeah, it's a bit of an adjustment.
Well, we hope to get you on again, because the role that you're playing, certainly there'll be, you know, more stories to tell, won't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'd love a follow-up. We'd love to follow once the ball's, you know, further rolled and that sort of stuff, to get a bit of a follow-up on how it's all going.
Love to come back. Thanks for having me.
Now, Adam, obviously we always have a hiatus over the holidays, and just for our listeners, we are having an extra long hiatus first week back because of some leave. But we hope to be back in week two, which is also the week of DigiCon 2015. And we've got a few ideas for that, which we'll speak more of next term.
Yeah, we will. We're looking forward to that and what possibly we can do. So look, to everyone, all teachers out there, if you're going on holidays, we want to wish you a wonderful holiday break. Rest up, enjoy it, and don't get too cold. So I've been Adam Lavaz.
I've been Cara Johnson.
I've been Rick Keller Thompson, and the three of us have been three regular teachers.